But the new voice wasn't that of Emily. It was different. Yet Doc knew that he recognized it.
Quickly, my dearest.
Help me with the children, Emily. I can't see them. The grass is so long that they have simply vanished from sight.
Smoke. Now he could smell smoke. Behind him, the horse tossed its head, snapping the bridle, and it galloped away, eyes rolling, hooves pounding like thunder.
Emily! Emily!
Doc dropped to his knees, fumbling in the grass, feeling it moving over his skin, like sentient human hair. He couldn't feel the children, but he could hear them. They seemed to come from all around him. The smell of smoke was growing ever stronger, and now he could actually hear the crackling of flames. His wife was no longer to be seen. Through the mounting horror, Doc remained calm. He stood on the tips of his toes to try to spot Rachel and Julian, but now the grass was as high as his shoulders. The grove of live oaks had gone, and in their place stood a mound of earth, with a circle of stone pillars at its heart. And there stood...
Emily!
He started to run toward her, recognizing the mane of golden hair that hung to her waist, the bright crimson skirt halfway up her long thighs, the high scarlet boots and the sound of tiny spurs. Flames, dazzling yellow and orange, were swooping across the skyline, exploding through the tops of the grass. The wagon, horse, children, all were gone. All that was left was Emily.
Emily! No. Lori. Oh, my love were in my arms.
He reached out as he stumbled toward her. The tall teenager turned at his voice, and he saw the beginnings of the familiar, gentle smile that had brought him such happiness for so many months. They were nearly close enough to touch. Smoke billowed into Doc's face, blinding him and making him cough. But he felt his arms close around Lori. Emily. Lori. He opened his eyes again, his ears filling with the roar of the fire, his skin scorching, his clothes beginning to smolder from the heat. Doc experienced the illusion that his body was shrinking, becoming brittle and frail. His bones were layered in dust, his skin tight and dry. He was holding Emily, Lori, Emily, Lori, closely to him. Doc began to smile reassuringly at her. The smile died, stillborn. His mouth filled with bile as bitter as wormwood. Doc held a log of charred, blackened wood, shaped like a human being, smoking, with parts of the flesh still glowing like tiny rubies. The scorched ends of whitened bone protruded here and there through the roasted meat. A stubble of hair remained on the seared skull, like a cornfield after the fires of autumn have cleansed it. There were no eyes in the bubbling sockets, and the mouth was a sighing cave of agonized death. He dropped the corpse, stepping back from it, and saw that it still lived. The burned branches of arms and legs still moved, in feeble, uncoordinated motion, like a willow near a shaded pool as the breeze touches it.
Die!
But it wouldn't. It was even struggling to rise, fingerless hands reaching plaintively toward him, in a mockery of prayer.
For the love of God, Montresor!
Doc waved helplessly at the creature with his sword stick, the silver lion's head gripped firmly in his gnarled fist.
And die in my bed again.
And Doc Tanner's screams woke the other five people, who lay sprawled around the Matran's chamber.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Kate Torrey, David Coyne, and Christopher Walker. Deathlands number 9, Red Equinox. Ryan Carter opened his eye.
The walls of the gateway they jumped from had been dull gray armor glass. That redoubt had been situated in the quake-torn remnants of what had once been known, nearly 100 years ago, as California. Way back before the Great Madness, when the skies grew dark and the civilization died. A world had almost died as well. The surface of the earth was now dotted with no more than small, inbred, isolated settlements, often with a high rate of bizarre mutations. On the far side of this excited room, Doc Tanner was sobbing to himself very quietly, like a tiny cornered kitten. His mouth sagged open, and a thread of spittle dangled into his lap. One hand still gripped the silver lion's head hilt of his ebony sword stick. Ryan could see tears clinging to the gray stubble on Doc's cheeks and chin. The sudden, shocking death of Doc's girlfriend, Lori Quint, had horrified them all. The rushing fire had dashed all hope of a rescue. There had been no chance even of a decent burial. Considering the already fragile state of Doc Tanner's mind, it wasn't out of the question that he'd slipped straight into a catatonic madness. Ryan massaged his temples with his fingers. Making a jump was like having some crazed mutie with iron gloves rummaging around inside your brain. Ryan had once been fed some jolt that contained a quantity of synthesized spin. His head had felt like it was being sucked dry and sandblasted all at the same time. Using a Matrans gateway was much worse. He reached down automatically for his G-12 caseless Heckler & Koch assault rifle, fingers stroking its smooth body. Ryan shuffled himself to a more upright position, wincing as the butt of his hand blaster dug into his hip. To clear his scrambled mind, he ran through a check on the specifications of the pistol.
6 hour. Model 226, 9mm. Overall length is 7.62 inches. Barrel length is 4.41 inches. Weight loaded is 25.52 ounces. 15 rounds. Push button release.
You didn't mention the built-in baffle silencer.
I was coming to it.
Ryan grinned at J.B. Dix, who was at the opposite side of the chamber.
Sure you were. Oh, rat blasted. These jumps still make me feel like throwing up.
J.B. carefully unfolded his wire-rimmed glasses from a pocket of his worn leather jacket and wiped them on his sleeve. He held them up to the ceiling lights, then placed them on his nose. He looked at Doc, who sat next to him. The old man's eyes were closed, and he was still weeping, but silently now. J.B. caught Ryan's eye, and he tapped his own forehead meaningfully.
Could be Lori's chillings pushed him into the back room for keeps.
Could be.
Christy Roth, next in line to Ryan, was also awake. She brushed a hand through her fiery mane of scarlet hair.
I thought I was gonna float around in the dark forever. Oh, there has to be a better way of traveling 1,000 miles in a couple of seconds.
She looked across at Doc.
Hope you aren't right about him, J.B. Doc's hold on what's real and what isn't was never too strong. Lori dying like that? It's enough we got a sick Freezy on our hands without Doc going slack-mouthed on us.
The Freezy in question was lying on his back next to Christy. A thin trickle of blood seeped from a corner of his lips, through the black stubble of his sprouting beard. His horn-rimmed glasses lay on the floor on one of the glowing metal discs. Ryan caught a